in podcast land. This is Trevin McGee for the Scene Stealers podcast. I'm here with Trey Hawk and Eric Moline.
Hello.
Hi.
Scene Stealers. How are you guys doing?
I'm great. I'm fantastic.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Thanks for asking, Trevin.
Hey, you know,
you're
I like
a peach.
To,
yeah.
How are you doing?
You know, it's good to be asked once in a while, and I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine. Real quick, though, I'm still excited from last Friday's evening of 8-Bit event we had down at the Screen Lane Crossroads.
Do you mean the sold-out evening?
The sold-out evening. Big
it
success.
Was a week's worth of excitement. Yeah.
So it was a great time, and we had a lot of fun. Big thanks to Patrick and the people at the Screenland and everyone at Lost in Reviews and lostinreviews.com. And Universal, who provided like 500 bags, pretty much everything Scott Pilgrim they had left over from the San Diego Comic-Con ended up at this event. And we had some great artists that showcased some stuff, and hopefully they got to sell some things too. So,
and if you go to scenestealers.com and look at our report from the event, you can see live video of our Sex Bob-omb tribute band.
Yeah, and that tribute band has been retweeted by the likes of Edgar Wright and reposted on Facebook by the official Scott Pilgrim.
Is that true?
And, yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of stuff happened over the weekend. So,
not everybody. You know, there's a lot of Scott Pilgrim happenings going on right now because Edgar's encouraging them. But not every one of them has a Sex Bob-omb tribute band.
And the ones that do probably don't sound as good as ours.
Ours was awesome.
Pretty badass.
Yeah.
So. Good job all around, everyone.
Thanks to Michelle and Barry and Cameron for making that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We've only got a couple of movies today, and they're really home runs.
Now, this is coming from the guy who hasn't seen either of them.
Yeah, that's great.
So what's
it's
he?
Like we've got a slow movie week.
Yeah, we have a slow
he
movie week.
Seen
I haven't
anything.
Seen any of them, so it's a slow movie week. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
They're both home runs.
They're both big winners. That's why I didn't go see either of them.
Right. I wasn't interested in them, so they must not have been any good.
Isn't that the same rule you guys apply to everything?
Yeah.
I didn't want to see it. So it wasn't
I've already decided Avengers is no good. I haven't seen it yet, but I know it's going to suck.
That's not the same thing.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, we've got The 5-Year Engagement and The Pirates Band of Misfits, the new kids movie from Aardman Studios, the guys behind Wallace and Gromit.
And Chicken Run.
All right, so we should just get into that. Trey, do you want to tell us?
Yeah, I'll
tell
start.
Us more?
I saw The Pirates Band of Misfits.
3D?
In 3D,
ooh.
Yeah. And I'll comment on that in a second. But just quick synopsis. This is an underdog film. We've got the main character, the pirate captain, who is a, you know, not-so-good pirate. His stores of booty are running low. He always chooses subpar ships to board and to plunder. And yet he has aspirations of being chosen as the pirate of the year. There's an annual contest that takes place every year on Blood Island. And it is just a competition of who can garner the most plunder.
I wasn't aware that they had pirate contests.
Yeah,
they do.
You know that?
They
it's kind of like the American Idol of pirates.
They do.
I was thinking more like the Mary Kay.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Exactly. This is the Mary Kay of pirate competitions.
So. Okay.
And so he decides this year he's going to win it. He redoubles his efforts. Everything kind of goes wrong. He goes through a series of ships from, you know, leper ships to ghost ships until he stumbles across Charles Darwin's ship and takes him captive because Darwin recognizes the pirate captain's fat parrot as the only remaining dodo. And so Charles Darwin...
He's gathering up the species. Yeah.
Charles Darwin wants to take it and present it in London. And the pirate captain mistakes what Charles Darwin says as like, oh, we're going to get untold riches for presenting this dodo. So the pirate captain wants to go and do this. The problem is Queen Victoria despises pirates, and so to go into, you're basically going into the belly of the beast if he goes and presents this.
Ever
dodo.
Since you brought Charles Darwin into this movie sounded like something completely different.
It's I mean, it's basically an underdog film. The pirate captain is trying to figure out a way to get lots and lots of untold riches.
But is there something going on underneath the surface because they have these historical figures in this historical fictional background?
Kind of. Some of the jokes are very smart and very subtle. And, you know, some of them actually take place far in the background. You really have to be paying attention to the frame. But it's, you know, there's enough hijinks, I think, to keep a kid entertained.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you know, silly stuff that happens. There are some really cute, I think somewhat overused transitional elements where you see this guy, one of the pirates, throwing out these red pucks onto the scene and you don't know what's going on. And then they cut to an overhead of a map. And then you see that, oh, the ship that's moving on the map, it's making the dotted line. I mean, so there are some cute transitional elements and stuff like that. I don't think there's any reason to see it in 3D at all. You know, the colors are going to be better and brighter, and you're not going to have to deal with, you know, any distortion of 3D.
No. Your kids aren't going to go cross-eyed either.
Yeah, well...
But knowing that this is an Aardman Studios thing, is this computer graphics or is this stop motion?
It's a mixture. It's stop motion, but then there are some smoke effects and some big geographies that they place their characters into that are obviously computer generated.
Is it stop motion like Corpse Bride was, where some of it was, or is it stop motion like almost all of Coraline was?
I think...
Because Coraline is one of my favorite 3D movies of all time. And
you'll
I think
be
it's
pretty
because
satisfied because they do the stop motion. Like oftentimes they have these big flagons of grog. Mm-hmm. And so...
you have to call this episode Flagons of Grog.
I mean, it's a movie about pirates. Come on, right. Get into it, dudes.
Here's my question. Is this like Cars 2? Is there a secret pro... liberal agenda message that's going to indoctrinate all our children?
No. I mean, there's kind of a fun kind of a fun trick to it as far as why they're collecting these animals and stuff like that. There is a fun trick to it, but it's not like they're not making an argument.
But they're not like evolution is real. You're right.
No. They're not making an argument. In fact, they make actually some pretty funny Darwin jokes.
Yeah.
Because you know, there's one where one of the people goes, I guess we're all just slugs. And Darwin's just like, wait, what did you just say? You know, I mean, there are different things. There's a point Darwin has a pet monkey.
Yeah.
And there's a point where they're both eating a meal. And the pirate captain goes, you two don't happen to be related, do you? I mean, so there are jokes based on the character.
Is there a flying spaghetti monster in this movie?
No.
Okay. Ever since Cars 2 tried to trick my kids into...
not buying fossil fuels.
Conserving.
Yeah.
Your imaginary kids.
Yeah,
your
imaginary.
About.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the McGees.
I love those kids.
The McGees.
They're called 12 hours of sleep a night.
There's no agenda. They're really just used as characters.
Mm-hmm.
And some jokes are built in because of the characters, because of the historical characters.
Okay.
But that's about it. You know, it was fun. I was not upset at all leaving it.
Trey's judgment of
that's the
of computer
scale.
Animated.
That's the hawk scale.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
was
that's
I upset.
You know, yeah. I don't have a whole lot. It's not targeted to me.
Sure.
It's targeted towards kids predominantly, mm-hmm. and then there's enough in there, like subtle humor and mm-hmm. little things that will keep the parents. Entertaining.
So it's like a good DreamWorks movie, but not a good Pixar movie.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Like a good Pixar movie appeals to adults.
Scale.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. No. I mean, I think that's a good way of
a five.
Like Shrek 2.
I don't think anything Shrek. Anything okay. Shrek touches ruins.
Shrek 2 was good. I hated the rest of them, but Shrek 2 was good.
Okay.
Mostly because Puss in Boots was brand new.
Yeah. Just referred to him as Puss in Boots.
Puss
in
Boots.
I think you did.
Did I?
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, that would be the adult version of that movie.
Yes.
I'm giving it a minor rock fist up. You know, I do think it's worthwhile. I do think, you know, this will be a good one. It's inoffensive. It's something that is safe to take the kids to, but at the same time is often smart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to translate Trey's rating for everybody out there that regularly goes to children's films. Mm-hmm. This is a Rock Fist way up. Yeah. Right? If you go to the Ice Age movies and the Madagascar movies where all the talking animal films, right?
Yeah.
And you suffer through these movies and you have to like that you take your kids to. This is one that
If you've seen Ice Age ever, if you've seen Madagascar ever, you will be happy to see
you've
this.
Earned,
you will be thrilled
you've
to
earned
see this.
One good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just excited because both of those sequels, number 3 and 4 or 3 and 3, are coming out this summer. So
yeah.
Well, I'm just happy to send you to those.
Well, yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did like Puss in Boots last year, and Rango I thought was fantastic. I think I would have given both of those had I rated them solid Rock Fist up.
Okay.
Kung Fu Panda minor. I mean, come on.
We need to get Alan in here. He's the only non-curmudgeonly.
It's not that he's curmudgeonly.
He's not curmudgeonly.
He is a fan of animated films.
Right.
So I think he inflates his ratings just a little bit. Because he.
Alan, you heard it.
Them.
Bring it on.
Alan, I love you.
Oh, Alan.
Oh, Alan, I love you.
All right.
I'm Pit Pat, and I love you.
Melina, it's your turn.
It is my turn.
Tell me about this 5-year engagement.
You ready to get engaged?
Oh.
Emily Blunt, Jason Segel.
I am going to engage you with this review.
This makes total
sense. Do they flush their toilets or their toilets down the career? Do they flush their careers down the toilets with this? Or is this lovely?
No.
This is really fitting because you work in social media.
Yes.
And every time someone in social media says the word engage or engagement, an angel gets their wings.
Yes. Yes, they do. Yeah.
We're going to be giving away lots of
wings. A lot of angels.
Yeah, because, I don't want to get into that. Okay, so this movie is written by Jason Segel and Nick Stoller, who are the guys who wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And it's directed by Stoller, who also directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Mm-hmm. These guys also co-wrote the Muppets movie this last year. So a busy creative pair. And as you know, Jason Segel is the star of the movie. He and Emily Blunt play this couple that I got to tell you guys, these guys have fucking sparks. Like the chemistry that these two have in this movie, you don't often find in romantic comedies. So I just want to say that right up front. Mm-hmm. From the very first scene in the film, when they talk about how they met, you can feel that these two people are really in love with each other. It's palpable, right? So on top of that, it's actually a really funny movie. Basically what happens is they get engaged right away, and then she is working on a graduate degree, and he's got a promising career as a chef, and he's about to get handed his own restaurant by his boss, and he decides he wants to support her, and they move to Michigan, and she works on her degree there, and Michigan has no good food, so he has to get a job at a sandwich shop. So the whole movie is him resenting her because he can't further his career and she's furthering his. It sounds like on paper, like this is the kind of thing that if you spent 90 minutes and you had an Ashton Kutcher an equivalent, a Justin Timberlake or somebody like that in it, this movie would be light and breezy and predictable and fun, and it would resolve itself very quickly. The couple would break up and get back together just when we expect it to. But this movie doesn't do that. This movie is over 2 hours long. Yeah, which is kind of brutal. But I often complain that romantic comedies go by the books and go by too quickly and don't develop their characters and take time enough with their characters for us to believe the big changes that they have to go through in these stories. Mm-hmm. This movie does, and you do believe it, and it's very, very funny. They have Chris Pratt from Parks and Recreation is his best friend. That guy's hilarious. Allison Brie from Community and Mad Men is the sister of Emily Blunt. She's really funny. David Paymer is in this. Brian Posehn is in this. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart is in this. Posehn or whatever, however the fuck you pronounce his name.
Okay.
There's a lot of really funny stuff going on in this film and a lot of gags that happen real quickly but don't seem like big, big moments. They just come and they go. It's like I remember walking out of the theater and somebody was talking about it and they were like, yeah, it was okay, but it was kind of boring. And I think the translation for that is that it wasn't constantly mugging and over the top and in your face like an Adam Sandler romantic comedy, right?
There's not a scene where like someone falls in a cake.
Right. And this is not funny people. Mm-hmm. This is produced by Judd Apatow, by the way. But it's not Judd Apatow's last movie, Funny People, which had a lot of darkness in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it does go to some places that feel real. It gives its characters credit enough for being smart people and then puts them in these situations where they're going to have a lot of different reactions to it. And we're going to be siding with him and then siding with her and vice versa and all that kind of stuff that they normally do. There's only one thing about this movie that I didn't like, besides the length, which was a little long, but how can I complain?
Cartoon dog?
When they gave it space. No, there's no cartoon dog. There's a decision made towards the end of the film. One of the subplots of Emily Blunt's thing doesn't feel right. You're watching the movie and you're like, this is a very intelligent person. This subplot doesn't seem to fit.
So it doesn't fit her character. The decision that's made.
You want to drop the spoiler?
No, I don't think so. Okay. It's not worth it. But at the end, you find out that there was somebody that was thinking the same thing you were throughout the film, and they were just letting her pass. They were just letting it go. And at that point, it makes her seem like a really stupid character.
Yeah.
And that sucks because she's not. We've seen both of these people. We've liked them both. They're very intelligent. And so that, it's like, why couldn't they make him, you know, the smart guy who wants his career and her the smart girl who has her career? In the end, they kind of undercut her a little bit. And I thought that was unfair.
Did she forget that she already had a graduate degree? No. And then at the very end, they're like,
you already have one.
No. It was just basically it was everything her degree was based on, right? Mm-hmm. Was taken away from her at the last minute by a comment by somebody who was basically letting her slide. So it just kind of undercut that. It's a small, small bitch, though. I really think this movie is fantastic. And what I really liked the best about it was Jason fucking Segel. This guy is so good. We've seen him in these movies before. And we saw him in Jeff Who Lives at Home, which was an okay film. But he was the best part of that movie. And he was doing really interesting, subtle work. In this movie, he's doing it again. There's more real... moments in this movie than there were in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Forgetting Sarah Marshall is more broad and probably a funnier film overall. But there's some stuff going on in this film that behind his eyes where you're just like, man, I mean, he's showing a lot of different things at once. So I just think it's a really well-written film. And when we complain about romantic comedies, I think this is the kind of film that shows us that if you cast it smart, if you write it smart, and you take your time that you can have a really good one. I don't think it's going to blow everybody up.
Right.
It doesn't have the capacity like Knocked Up or 40-Year-Old Virgin to really connect with people, but it is rated R. It does get kind of raunchy and it's full of real moments. It's just a little bit more subdued than those movies.
Yeah, and no, it's interesting to listen to you describe it. It sounds like you're describing a drama.
Yeah, there's definitely more drama in this than people are ready for. Yeah. So if you're excited about seeing this movie, if you're going to a romantic comedy this weekend, I can't recommend this one enough, but be prepared that there is a little bit more drama and letting the characters breathe than you're used to.
But it is legitimately funny.
It's very funny.
Yeah. You know.
Mindy Kaling is funny in it as well. I mean, it's cast really well.
Yeah.
It's
cast. I mean,
Jackie Weaver is in it too.
There are those
Animal
weird,
Kingdom, the Oscar nominee.
Yeah.
Every now and then it's like there are those weird like
I don't even know what to call them, like romantic
comedy drama things.
Yeah.
Where what was it? The Apartment or the breakup.
Billy Wilder?
Not that apartment.
Oh, you're talking about Jennifer Aniston and Vince.
Yeah, the breakup. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, one, it doesn't have very many funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, you can tell that it's a film that does not know what it wants to be.
Yeah.
Whether it wants to be kind of a brutal drama about
just
a vicious
poignant,
breakup.
Sad moments.
Right.
And then,
or whether it wants to be a comedy.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, that was my only concern and the only reason why, you know, I asked you.
And
that
a lot like
question,
that movie, this movie's kind of shoved to the last week before summer movie season explodes. I mean, next week is Avengers, and after that, every movie that's going to come out is going to have a nine-figure budget. So
I have my fingers crossed for it because I think it's really good timing because that there's that whole idea of counter-programming if you have a huge movie like Avengers showing up. And this will be the movie that people who don't want to go see that go see.
Yeah.
I think it's very good, though. I'm impressed by Siegel, especially, and the chemistry and the writing. Him and Stoller, I mean, they're working with these formulas. We've seen these formulas a million times, but they're making them work.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's to be commended.
I mean, there's something to be said for doing that well.
Yep.
I haven't seen the ad campaign for this. Have either of you guys seen any of the TV commercials?
No, I haven't.
A little bit. I think I looked at the trailers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I saw one of the trailers, I remember, but I ask because, you know, I don't know if their marketing is like from the writers of, you know, Getting Sarah Marshall. Like, I don't know if that's how they're trying to market it or what they're trying. Because that happens a lot, too, when you get, I mean, 21 Jump Street was kind of like that, where the ad campaign was, you know, from the guys who brought you Superbad.
Adventureland is the perfect example of that. From the director of Superbad, then you get this subdued kind of...
Yeah.
I think there might be a little of that this weekend. I think that this weekend we might get a little backlash from people who wanted this to be bigger, shorter, and funnier.
Yeah.
I think it is very funny, but it's also just a little bit darker and a little more melancholy as well. It has a great ending, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's so awesome when you have a good... And it's like something that you would think, I can't believe I've never seen this before in a romantic comedy.
It was all a dream, wasn't it?
No.
He wakes up next to Bob Newhart.
I'm not going to tell you guys. It's just knowing the plot, it's just like it was kind of always towards that. And then it happened, and you're like, oh, well, I can't believe I haven't seen this before. And it's just clever. That's all I can say.
Yeah. All right.
So I'm giving it a solid rock fist up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So actually, I mean, it was kind of a sleeper week, but we've got two positive
Unless
reviews.
You're Trevor McGee.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of these movies. If I didn't want to see them, they're no good.
They're no good.
Was that me talking? Or was that? Yeah. It sounded so good.
I get you guys confused.
I know. He does the best impression. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with some form of podcast and video to do with the Avengers, this small little underdog indie movie that might have a shot.
To answer your question, the poster says right at the top, from the producer of Bridesmaids.
Okay.
There you go.
From the producer of Bridesmaids.
Yep.
Okay.
It's accurate.
Yeah, it is. I don't think anyone knows what that means. From the producer of something.
Yeah.
From the guy who secured the permits.
Yeah. Well, I had a guy I work with just the other day text me the other night after watching Hostel. Mm-hmm. And he was like, dude, just saw Hostel. What the fuck? What was Quentin Tarantino thinking?
Oh, yeah.
And I texted him back. I'm like, he didn't direct that, man. He's like, his name was on it. I'm like, yeah, he produced it.
Yeah.
That means that after it was all over, his buddy Eli Roth said, hey, will you put your name on this for me?
Right.
I'm like, you got to be careful, man.
Yeah.
From the producer of Citizen Kane.
But, I mean, he is right because if it says produced by Steven Spielberg, that means something totally different. It does.
Is that
look
a dig?
At,
is that no, a dig?
It's not a dig. No, it's just saying there are some very hands-on producers.
He's way more collaborative.
And there are some very hands-off producers.
I think Apatow, apart from a couple of films, has done a really good job of helping the creative projects that he... I mean, he absolutely produced Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
He told Kristen Wiig, write a movie around yourself and I'll produce it and then help them every step of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, he is the type of producer that finds really creative, very talented people and just, you know, makes, you know, through encouragement and through helping them secure funds and whatever.
He helps with the story, too.
Yeah.
And which is all the more odd considering Drill Bit Taylor. Caught at the end of the podcast, a little Drill Bit Taylor in your mouth. Good night, everybody.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Adios.